Hi, it's Simon Smart with you. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Well, the British writer Francis Spufford surprised many when he outed himself as a Christian with his book recently called Unapologetic, Why, Despite Everything, Christianity Can Still Make Surprising Emotional Sense. In his book, Spufford presents a passionate and personal case for considering Christianity. And unlike many of the arguments of recent times between atheists and believers, he takes the path not of focusing on rational arguments, but on the emotional appeal and coherence of the Christian story. He called the book Unapologetic because it's not a defense of the ideas of Christianity, and he says, because he's not sorry. I spoke with him at the Adelaide Festival. Francis Spufford, great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
An important part of your writing is that Christianity is an emotionally satisfying thing. Now, why did you take that tack?
Because there's an enormous overemphasis at the moment on ideas as the only test of how important something is. Christianity has always been a religion of the heart. It speaks to the heart in the first place. It was making its sense to people before there were any theologians, and theology and all of the kind of systematizations of Christianity actually come up behind the primary work it does. And that's true in lives as well. It reaches out to people and it speaks to people in kind of elementary ways that don't hang around waiting for our sophisticated explanations. So since it's a world full of pervasive, twiddly explanations of the ideas, I thought it would be worth trying to talk back in the kind of simple Morse code of the heart instead, because it's realistic, because that's where people live when they do or don't feel the urge to faith.
What is the most emotionally appealing aspect of Christianity in your mind?
I'm an old-fashioned sort of believer in sin in some ways. I think, although it's not the fashionable place to start, I think it tells us the bad news about ourselves in a coherent and useful and kind of relieving sort of way. The first bit of emotional sense that Christianity made to me, and I think it's a useful starting point, is that it takes your destructive impulses seriously. It provides you with an escape hatch from that rather unconvincing, all sunshine, all the time account of human behaviour, which is, you know, demonstrably not true, and leaves you stuffed when you're trying to account for bits of your own behaviour which don't fit the model.
Yes, so people come to, I think, connect with what you're talking about there, but even that thought is one that modern people want to resist. Why do you think people are so reluctant to face the sort of the darkness of our world and our own darkness?
Because we have a hysterically anxious sense that unless we're admirable, we're nothing, I think. I think there is a terrible anxiety in contemporary culture about being fallible or vulnerable or wrong about stuff. And that unless you've tried the daring experiment of saying you're in the wrong, you're not quite sure it's survivable necessarily. You think that, you know, kind of the battlements will fall, the walls will collapse, the castle of yourself will implode, and there may be nothing left but a stain on the pavement, which is not the case. In fact, a fallible self can be a kind of well-founded self, a self which has room for failure and therefore kind of room for much more as well. But it's hard to know in advance that kind of taking off the mask of virtue will leave you with a perfectly acceptable face underneath. But it seemed to me that if you want to have a conversation about experience, you need to talk in the language of experience. You need to bring in your own life to some extent. So it ended up being quite a quite a personal book, because if you're going to say, if you're going to recommend to people the advantages of vulnerability and fallibility, then you better
you
present
do that on the page.
You really do. You really do. And if I'm complaining that it's too abstract to talk just about whether God exists, it's also too abstract to talk about, you know, things going wrong. So I had to particularise a bit. So there's a bit of kind of there's a bit of personal human dirt on the page there.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart. We're listening to an interview I did with Francis Spufford, who's a British writer and the author of Unapologetic: Why, Despite Everything, Christianity Can Still Make Surprising Emotional Sense. In this part of the interview, Spufford talks about why grace is such an important concept in Christianity and why the figure of Jesus is such a compelling one in his own life.
The concept of grace is an important one for you, and it's the distinctive thing, isn't it, of Christianity?
It is. We're not the only monotheistic religion, but we're the only monotheistic religion which takes that belief in there being kind of one God pervading and sustaining everything, and then says that what he wants from us isn't primarily nice, methodical, law-governed behaviour. Both Judaism and Islam, both of which can be very generous about this, say what God wants from men and women is to follow a set of sensible rules. And if you do that, then you know you're good enough, which is a kind of, in some ways, a kinder and more moderate thing than Christianity offers, because we're altogether more wild-eyed here. Because what we say is that what God primarily wants from us is an open-ended and in some ways impossible commitment to try and behave as generously as God does. But we're finite beings. We run out of stuff. We try to love our enemies and we fail. We have to take thought for the morrow, even if the lilies of the field don't, because you know we have mortgages to pay. We have children who depend on us. It's as if Christianity is pulling our attention out of the world. It's as if we're being asked to look at something else, something not primarily commonsensical. We're being asked to love in ways that we can't sustain at all easily. And it would simply be a recommendation of an impossibility if it weren't accompanied by grace, if we weren't also being told that the impossible work of love would be done for us. So for me, right at the centre of Christianity is grace rather than law.
What is it about Jesus that's so compelling for you?
That he's so very much not like what you'd expect if you were designing some kind of royal progress by a god on earth. I mean, there are lots of stories about gods visiting the earth, but they don't behave like a puzzle-setting, storytelling provincial rabbi in Galilee very much. They're usually quite superheroic in one way and another, whereas the two things that Jesus says most are, what can I do for you, and who do you say that I am? It's amazingly uncoercive. And sort of homely. When he talks about vineyards and parents and jobs and sheep and lost coins and, you know, lamps under baskets and things. But when you look closely at it, it gets stranger and stranger, because what seems to be being articulated in that homely language is a perspective of generosity which is not completely human. I mean, it comes from somewhere else for me, and it shines through his human nature, tells us that human nature is capable of a lot more than we thought it was. But for me, it has the authentically other sound of a love that never runs out and never gets tired. But he is never recorded as being disgusted by anyone. He is never recorded as saying no to any request. And whenever he speaks to anybody, even if he's saying something unpromising about camels getting through needles' eyes. He is taking that individual human in front of him absolutely seriously, as if nothing were going on in the world but him talking to that person. It's one of the things that's so striking, because in some ways the Gospels are an endless crowd scene. He travels around in a cloud of dust, people wave their arms, the kind of the disciples behave as if they're, you know, as if they're supposed to be controlling access to a celebrity. He tells them to stop, they do it anyway. But whenever there's a zoom, whenever we get close enough in to see him talking to one person, it's as if the kind of the heat and the dust and the noise go away, and there's just kind of complete concentration on the human in front of him. And even when he's on trial, even when he's dying, that doesn't end. He is still all attention. And I think that seems to me to be significantly different from any of the other of the old pagan stories about Zeus turning up and kind of leaping on maidens and things.
It's a thoroughly unexpected story, isn't it? As is the idea that a god would die. Mm. Now, all rise again. The resurrection story, not very fashionable these days to believe in things like that.
I do, though.
Yeah, why does that? Why? How?
Because it doesn't require you to believe that he didn't really die. Because it doesn't. It's not a way of pretending that death doesn't matter. It's not a way of saying, but it all turned out all right in the end. He's not some supernatural personage being temporarily inconvenienced by being dead for a little bit. He's really dead, and it's a real tragedy of a very ordinary kind. His execution puts him among hundreds of thousands of other people who are executed in that particularly unpleasant Roman way, often reserved for rebellious slaves. Cicero said that crucifixion was so low that well-bred people shouldn't even mention it. So it's God dying like a condemned criminal of the lowest possible kind. And nobody comes to rescue him. Nobody turns up with a stepladder and a fast horse. The power of the resurrection is that it only happens after the worst has happened. It only happens when tragedy has run its full measure. It's all the bad news there could possibly be about where human lives go, and then something else. It's impossible. Yes, of course it's impossible. That's the point of it. It's the ordinary course of the whole universe being temporarily upended, and the point of it is that God knows the whole weight of death and how much it matters and how fearful it is, and that we are finite creatures who end. And he's not arguing with that. He's just saying, but it's not all. There's a little bit more.
There's a lovely phrase at the end of your book that says, and it's a bit of a summary, I think, of the Christian faith, which says that far more can be mended than you know.
Yeah.
How would you explain that?
Because Christianity is a kind of battered and dented kind of religion. It doesn't say that bad things don't happen. It just says that actually human beings are capable of being kind of glued and screwed back together again in ways that we don't necessarily expect. It says that, I mean, I was having a conversation with the guy who was translating my book into Dutch, and he said, mended. He said, more can be mended than you know. That can't be the right word, because in Dutch that's the word we use for bicycles when they're broken. I said, no, I mean the broken bicycle word exactly. I want a very homely image of God sorting out punctures here, because there's a kind of patience there in Christianity, a sense that no matter how wrong things go, far more can be mended than you know. That your realism about things going wrong needs to be perhaps accompanied by a bigger realism about ways in which things going wrong doesn't have the last word.
Well, that was British writer Francis Spufford explaining why he's a Christian believer. He's the author of Unapologetic, Why Despite Everything, Christianity Can Still Make Surprising Emotional Sense. It's great to have your company. See you next time on Life and Faith.